Good afternoon. We're going to get started. This is a hearing of the Board of License Commissioners. Today is June 12, 2019. It's approximately 3:03 p.m. We're at the Michael J. Lombardi Building, 831 Mass Ave, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Just for the record, the agenda that's there is exactly the same agenda that was posted, except with some add-ons that came in after the posting. Also, with some notations of matters that were either listed in duplicate or in error on the agenda, specifically number 27, which was already considered and granted by the board, number 28, which is duplicate, number 29, 30, 31, 32, and 34 are all listed twice on the agenda, and you'll see the notations there. And that is it. We will get started. If you're going to have any conversations, please take them outside. When you take them outside, just make sure that you keep the volume down because we can hear you and it's it interrupts us. So we'll start with application 1465656, Shake Shack, Harvard Square, Boston, DBA Shake Shack, comma victualler, all alcohol license for a change of manager to William
Paul Richter.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record? And before I start, also, counselors, please fill out the notice of appearance forms. Thank you. And if you're a witness on a case, please fill those out, too, so that we know, one, how to spell your name, and two, also to send you the decision. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Joe Devlin for the applicant, and with me is William Hoffrichter. Devlin is D-E-V-L-I-N, and... I'll submit my appearance, so I'll probably take care of it. And we're here before you, Chief Commissioner, how are you? We're here before you for a change of manager application for the Shake Shack at Harvard Square.
Thank you. And Mr. Hoffrichter. Hoffrichter, thank you.
Very good.
You are currently the manager of record at the Seaport location, is that correct?
Correct.
And based on the affidavit you submitted, you are intending to stay the manager there as well while they find a replacement there or here? I was a little confused about that.
Madam Chair, I actually discussed that yesterday with the company, and that's actually not correct. What this company, it was left in from a prior affidavit. I just noticed it yesterday, and I was like, I don't think that's actually how it is happening, so I apologize for that.
Okay.
The way Shake Shack operates, because they have smaller locations, a general manager, the person in charge, has two locations, and they will be there at least 30 hours at each location. They're the most consistent and the highest salaried person. And so it's their preference to have them as the manager of record for the two locations. And they do try to put them close enough together, you know, so they can get there in those amounts of time. Because it's a smaller, fast casual type place, they have a salaried AGM, assistant general manager, underneath them. Then they have three salaried managers under that person, and then one hourly manager, and then everybody else is hourly.
Okay.
As you go down that tree, the people's retention gets less consistent. So he is also the person who's likely to be here 2 years from now, you know, and not having to be come in every 6 to 8 months. The AGM is probably the next person if the city's uncomfortable with this, the 30 hours, dual hours each. They do have, you know, a good set of management underneath them. The AGM is a salaried employee, and then they have those three salaried managers under them. They're TIP certified. Mr. Hoffrichter is there, not quite full time, but he is definitely be there 30 hours each week, and sometimes it's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there are some options if the city's not comfortable with it. But that's actually, and I will make a change to this and resubmit it if it's acceptable to the board.
Okay. And are you TIPS or 21 proof certified?
Yeah.
And how long have you been? 2 years was it that I saw?
With Shake Shack, yeah, just over 2 years.
And prior to that, you had some experience as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been in restaurants since I was 15. I've been managing since I was like 23.
And you have had no disciplinary issues with the local board or the ABCC?
No.
And are you currently up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regards to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yeah.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
I do.
Do you guys have any questions?
Okay.
So I would vote to grant, pending the submission of the corrected affidavit or withdrawal, either way, counselor. I don't know, do you want to withdraw that affidavit or do you just want to resubmit
one? The ABCC is going to want to see it.
Okay.
And have an explanation in the file. I mean, they usually go down even to 25 hours, but they find that acceptable. But they will want to see the affidavit.
All right, so granted, pending the submission of the amended affidavit in accordance with the representations made here today, and also we'll need your proof of tips or 21 proof certification.
Okay.
Granted.
Also,
for the record, since I forgot to say it at the beginning, present today are all commissioners of the board, and we're being audioed and tape recorded privately, and we are audio recording this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The second matter is Verizon Inc.'s request to extend or amend the special noise variance 31871. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your last name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Johanna Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R, Counsel for Verizon.
My name is Stan Usovic, U-S-O-V-I-C-Z, Government Relations for Verizon.
Thank you.
My name is John Dement, J-O-H-N-D-E, capital M-E-N-T, Facilities Engineering and Construction for Verizon.
Thank you.
We are here in relation to the property at 10 Ware Street. We're seeking an extension of the special noise variance that we're currently operating under. We were last before the commission on March 15th, 2019. At that time, we were seeking a special noise variance to permit monthly testing of the generator at the property while Verizon completes the installation of sound attenuation equipment, which will allow the generator, when installed, to operate within the limits of the noise ordinance. The commission granted the variance subject to certain conditions. Those conditions include provision of biweekly updates to residents and to Chief Investigator Boyer, and designation of a single point of contact at Verizon that neighbors could contact if they had any issues with the ongoing work, and we have complied with those. There were other conditions in the special noise variance that required that the sound attenuation installation be completed by June 12th and provided for this board to hold a noise violation hearing if the generator's noise emissions were not brought into compliance by that date. We are seeking a modest extension to the deadlines that were set forth in the original special noise variance. Due to unforeseen circumstances, we have had some delays with the ordering and installation of materials. We have used best efforts to move this project along, but there have been delays. In addition, completion has been slower because we have been limiting the hours of construction from 8 to 4 in order to mitigate impacts on the neighborhood. We are very close to completion, so the extension that we're seeking is fairly short. As I noted in my letter request of May 22nd, we're looking for permission for 2 more test runs, one on July 10th and one on July 23rd, subject to the same conditions as in the original special noise variance. In addition to those 2 dates, I want to flag this issue. It actually just came up this morning. We did do a test run that the city was and the neighbors were notified of this morning at 10 a.m. as we were permitted to do under the special noise variance. In doing so, we did learn that the mechanism that is intended to switch power from the temporary to the permanent generator is not functioning as expected. We're working on rectifying this problem now. We expect it to be completed within the next couple of weeks. There may be a need to do one additional run to make sure that that turnover mechanism is working properly. We don't have a specific date, but it would be sometime between now and July 10th. That would be something that if we need to do it, we would coordinate with Chief Investigator Boyer. We would provide, you know, at least 48 hours notice to the neighborhood. We're not even sure if we need it, but since we're here, I thought I would flag the issue if that could be incorporated, if we need it, into the extension of the variance. We'd appreciate it.
So the two more test runs that you're proposing, the 10th and the 23rd, are those in terms of the attenuation or in terms of the FCC regulation?
That is, those are the regular monthly. So the July 10th, if I understand it, is the regular monthly required by the FCC regulation, mm-hmm. and then the 23rd would be the final test run to make sure that for the full installation.
For the attenuation. Okay. And then you said that you had some delays in the ordering and installation of the materials. What were those?
John, do you want to speak to that?
It would be the coordination of the engineering between the manufacturer and the vendor installing and our engineer that made adjustments based on the sound engineer's decision. So there was different configurations of the ductwork that houses the sound attenuation and how it was to be supported off the ground. It was originally thought it was going to be supported off in like structural steel, and then it was changed to like a concrete pad. So there was some adjustments which we have to go through our engineer, which we have to go through the permitting process to get approved to make those adjustments to our plan, so it delayed us.
Are there any residents here that wanted to be heard on this? Do you guys have any questions?
I'd just like to ask Inspector Boyer if she feels that...
Andrea Boyer, B-O-Y-E-R, investigator for the City of Cambridge License Commission. These are tests that need to happen for the FCC and also for us to even see if they're going to be in compliance. The incident that happened in the last couple days, I was alerted of that as well. They've been communicating with me. I know that there's some residents that have written letters to state that they want this to be done as soon as possible, and they're not always happy with Verizon and some of the construction and so forth, but it's been in within the hours, and they have alerted us and followed the noise variance conditions.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Anything else?
No, we have nothing further, thank you.
Well, with that said, I think based on the representations and everything and considering the enormity of what was expressed at the first hearing in terms of what this was going to take, I would say that we extend the noise variance through the end of July in the hopes that they can complete everything, and then otherwise the noise violation hearing that we were going to have in July, put it on for August at the first available agenda if this doesn't happen, and even if they're coming for another variance at that time, consider both at the same time.
I concur.
Okay, and then just to be clear, the conditions would remain the same in terms of the second Wednesday at 10 a.m., so the 7:10. Is the 23rd also a Wednesday?
The 23rd, I believe, is a Tuesday.
Okay. So I would be okay with that, but also at 10 a.m. And then the additional test that you said that you may need to perform to coordinate with Chief Boyer on that, and then also could keep both the residents and Ms. And Investigator Boyer on top of everything.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next matter is an application for a new Hackney driver's license from Amin Jasmine. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your last name for the record? You may sit down.
Hi, Hello, it's Samin Yasmin. It's Y-A-S-M-I-N-E.
Yasmin, sorry. Mr. Yasmin, can you tell us, you've never been a taxi driver before, is that correct?
That's correct.
And do you currently have a lease agreement, or are you negotiating a lease agreement right now, or you're just looking to get a taxi driver's license to then look for a job?
Just looking to get that medallion, you know, helping out my father with it.
Oh, okay. I remember. Officer Zito, can you just remind the board or tell the board the entire...
His father bought the medallion and it's going to be put under his son's name, so that's why he needs the...
Okay. All right, perfect. And so this is just in compliance with our ordinance.
Yes.
But you don't intend to drive the taxi, is that
no.
correct? Okay. All right. Let you guys take a look at that.
Just no issue with the background.
This is not there's no city attendant.
It might be here. Right there.
Oh, it's on the second page.
Granted. Thank you. Officer Zito will tell you about the next step. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, application 47687, Diggin Harvard Square LLC, DBA Diggin at 82 Mount Auburn Street for a new common victualer all alcoholic beverage license. Proposed hours 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. with seats for 49 and occupancy of 99. Rajesh Pancholi is proposed manager of record. The premise described as restaurant containing approximately 1,700 square feet, located on ground floor with kitchen storage, two dining areas, one exit, and one entrance. Additional 1,100 square feet of storage located in basement. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your last names for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is James Rafferty. I'm an attorney with offices at 907 Massachusetts Avenue in Cambridge. I'm appearing this afternoon on behalf of the applicant, Diggin Harvard Square LLC. Seated to my immediate left is the proposed manager, Raj Pancholi, P-A-N-C-H-O-L-I. And to Mr. Pancholi's left is Samuel Gruber, G-R-U-B-E-R. Mr. Gruber is an executive with the corporate entity. Despite his youthful appearance, he is an honors graduate of the Cornell School of Hospitality Management, and he's in charge of the Boston operation for Diggin.
Thank you. Mr. Pancholi, do you mind signing your application there? Okay. Thank you.
So the... Shall I proceed?
Yes, go ahead.
So the location, I suspect, is known to many as the former home of the J. Press Clothing Company, located on the corner of Mount Auburn Street and Dunster Street. It was a clothing store for more than 100 years. It closed approximately a year ago. The applicants were successful in obtaining zoning approval to put a restaurant in this location because, surprisingly, it's actually zoned. It's a little bit of an anomaly. That stretch of Mount Auburn Street and Harvard Square is actually zoned residential. And while the pre-existing retail use was grandfathered, this use required a variance. So the variance was approved, and the time period for the appeal has expired. I have a copy of the variance if the commission wants it for this file.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. This would represent the first operation of Dig In in Cambridge. They do, however, have four locations in the city of Boston, one of which has an alcohol beverage license, the location on Boylston Street. They're also in the Seaport District and Prudential Center and Downtown Crossing. The company has many outlets in the New York City area, approximately 28 locations in New York, one in Rye, New York. But this is a, as you can see by the floor plan, the I asked them to bring a copy of their menus if the board were interested, because it is a rather unique food offering, and it has a lot to do with the public needs centered around the request for the original license. This location really is going to be part of a trend of healthy kind of dining. The alcohol is very much a complement to the food. There will not be a bar. It is not anticipated that any customers would come into the premises merely for the consumption of alcohol. It is an application for an all-alcohol license, but it's anticipated that the spirits or liquor portion of the menu will be somewhat limited. Wouldn't expect things like Manhattans or martinis or that type, but craft cocktails have proven to be very popular in the New York locations, and they do tend to stay open late until 11 o'clock. And it's proven to be a very effective way of serving the public, particularly after the 8 o'clock hours. Admittedly, a large portion of their, given their price point, a large portion of their business from a demographic perspective tends to skew towards younger people, but in the evening hours, their experience has been that it's very much a sit-down operation where people tend to linger. There's considerable attention being paid to the interior build-out of the location. It really is an impressive store. It's got lots of natural light and windows, and the applicants hope to be able to capitalize on a lot of the activity that's coming off of the newly renovated Smith Center across the street. It's one of the appealing aspects of it. They looked at a number of locations in the area and were very excited to be able to secure this location. The application also requests, I'm sure the chair noted, for a waiver in the disclosure requirements. There are several, many investors in the company that have a very small percentage. So we followed, candidly, the same approach that was taken with the Boston Licensing Commission when they granted and was approved by the ABCC the same disclosure. So 4% interests are all disclosed in terms of Corey forms. I think there are six individuals that fit into that category, as well as Mr. Pancioli. Mm-hmm. And the others, we've, I think, provided you with a matrix that shows what their interests are. But in some cases, they're less than 1%, but they number in the hundreds, given the financial structure of the ownership. So we would ask that the commission allow us to proceed in that fashion. Mr. Pancioli himself has a long history in the restaurant industry and a fairly strong history with Dig In. He's been with the company itself since 2016. Prior to that, he has a near 15-year record in restaurants, principally with the Outback Steakhouse chain in three or four locations in Leominster and elsewhere. And most recently, since 2017, he is head of operations for Dig In's is it Boylston Street?
Oh, is it the Downtown Crossing?
The Downtown Crossing. The Downtown Crossing building is also an older brick building. It was the Boston Globe bookstore right at the corner there. So there is an affinity for restoring historic structures with the company, and they feel with that that's consistent with what they're all about. It's a very organic organization with a lot of emphasis on farming and local farmers. They form cooperative relationships with farmers. They list those farms on their menu. It's a very, I've learned all this from Mr. Gruber, but the whole approach here is to incorporate the growing and the cooking of food into a sustainable operation. So it will be unique in that respect, and as I said, the desire would be to serve the public this food, this type of cuisine, with the opportunity to provide alcohol.
Mr. Pancholi, have you been the manager of record and liquor license before?
I have.
Okay. Do you have any issues with the local board or the ABCC?
I had a one-day suspension when I was with the Outback Steakhouse in Leominster. That was to a my bartender served an underage guest, but did the math wrong on the license.
You said your bartender served an underage?
Yeah, the patron came in with a vertical ID. She did the math wrong. And she exited, and the commissioner, Sting, came in, and they informed us. We took necessary steps, reprimanding the bartender, which terminated her. We put in some training programs. Everyone was recertified in the TIPS program. And then any out-of-state or vertical license was verified by a manager moving forward.
Thank you. And are you up-to-date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regard to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yes, I am.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Yes.
Are you TIPS or 21 proof certified?
It is expired, but I'll retake it.
Okay. And I understand the concept of DIG. And I think, Counselor, you alluded that this type of operation is unique. Is that what you're saying in terms of the public need?
Well, the food product, yes, and particularly in the Cambridge area, that this there isn't, by the applicant's estimation, there's no establishment that's serving this level of caliber of cuisine with this focus on local and organic food products.
Thank you. Do you guys have any questions? Anyone in favor of this petition?
Yeah, I'm in favor of this petition.
Could you please state?
Xavier Dietrich. If the board can explain the evidence that's presented regarding public need, I have not seen any.
Okay, so is that in favor or in opposition?
That would be in favor of the applicant, but in opposition to the board itself, because I don't believe the board has seen any public need for this.
Okay. Anyone else?
If you approve this license, it will be an acknowledgement by the board that there essentially is no public need standard because no evidence has been presented regarding public need here.
Anyone else in favor of this petition or applicant? Anyone in opposition? Yes, could you please state your name for the record?
Hi, Attorney Kim Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y. Attorney Rafferty represented that the applicant was granted a zoning variance for a restaurant. However, this application is for a fast food business, which would not constitute a restaurant under Mass General Laws Chapter 140 or Chapter 138. Thus, it is not qualified to be granted a common vicular license or a common vicular all alcohol license as a fast food establishment.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Counselor, anything in closing?
Sure. I'd like to, if appropriate, respond to both of the comments made in public comment. First, the most recent comment. The operation of the restaurant was reviewed with the Commissioner of Inspectional Services, and the criteria for what qualifies as a fast food use was determined not to be present. Principally, one of those criteria involves the use of non-disposable plates and cutlery and a few other factors. So it is consciously not a fast food use. It would be akin to several locations in Harvard Square where a fast food use is not met the definition of what's proposed. So it the restaurant use as described to the commission was what was described to the zoning board. So that claim is unfounded and flawed legally because the criteria was reviewed by the Inspectional Services Department. As far as the public need goes, in my presentation I noted the unique nature of what the food service is being provided, and the public would not have another opportunity or does not currently enjoy an opportunity to enjoy alcohol in a venue where this type of cuisine is available. So that's the record comments that were offered by me in support of the public need requirement.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing.
Any questions?
Madam Chair?
No, we're done. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. With that said, I would vote to grant the application as submitted. Please, if you're going to interrupt, you may leave. Grant the application as submitted. We will need proof of Mr. Pancholi's TIPS or 21 proof certification. In terms of the disclosure exemption request, to the extent that we have to approve it, it is granted as well. And do you have the affidavit? Or did you already upload that?
We uploaded it, but okay. I have the original as well.
That's fine if you uploaded it, that's fine. Thank you. I will return two of the three menus.
Okay. Was there a motion?
Granted, yeah.
Oh, there was a motion to vote. I'm sorry. I heard the motion, but I didn't recall the vote, so thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next application is 4380 Tamiko Inc. DBA Cafe Sushi at 1105 Mass Ave for a new wine and malt package store license. Shaisei Imura is proposed manager of record of the premise described approximately 325 square feet of space on the first floor with one entrance or exit. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you. And could you please state and spell your name for the record?
My name is David Lipschutz, Lipshutz. I'm an attorney representing Tamiko Inc., DBA Cafe Sushi, and I'm located at 80 Williams Street, Suite 200, Wellesley, Massachusetts.
Thank you.
And Seiji Imura, Sheize, last name Imura, chef manager of Cafe Sushi Restaurant, 1105 Mass Ave, Cambridge, 02138.
I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name.
That's okay. It's spelled phonetically incorrect.
The corporate vote there is missing the date of the meeting, if you guys can complete that. Okay, and this is related to the alteration of premise application, correct? That we heard recently.
Correct.
And so this 325 square foot area is the entire takeout counter that you've made a separate entrance to, is that correct?
That's what we plan on doing, yes.
And then in terms of the package store type, is the way that it reads is so that it's sort of an amenity that you want to give to the people that are coming
right
to take out?
So our overall alcohol sales for the restaurant are pretty low to begin with, but we figured if we're going to separate the takeout, so it just alleviates the pressure for the front, move an extra way with more space, it makes it a little bit more clear cut and easier transaction. While we're doing that, what if we sold sake, essentially, that doesn't seem to be very available in the area or in Boston in general, because we try to have a pretty decent sake list. And so as an extra sort of amenity to the space and a service for the community and such, figured that we would try to see if that could work.
So, I mean, I think for me, I need to sort of understand exactly how you would be running this, because the way that I understand it and the way that I mean, again, you haven't done the changes, so it might be a little difficult for me to envision, but the way that you presented it, when you're walking by, it almost doesn't, I mean, this package store would be open to the public regardless of whether or not they would purchase your product. So that...
Order takeout or such,
yeah.
Correct.
So, but I'm not quite sure exactly how you're going to serve the public need. I guess that's what I'm struggling with in terms, I don't know, are you guys understanding me?
Very much so.
I think so. You're saying that if I'm allowed to go in without ordering takeout and buy.
I mean, it doesn't seem like you have a display there. It almost looks like, it literally looks, from what we got, a counter area where I'm putting in my order and the cash register, but there really is no display. Like, if I walk from the street, it almost doesn't invite me to purchase the sake. It invites me to buy from Cafe Sushi.
Right.
And then maybe I can take with my order the sake that I want to enjoy at home with what I purchased.
Right.
That's it.
That's something to consider too within the window space and such to demonstrate that we actually are selling sake for retail sale.
But the intent, the overriding intent, is to give a similar dining experience at a takeout way that they do for an in-store dining. So the sake and the wines they sell are fairly rare and not generally available to the public. So it is an accompaniment to a meal. So I see that the public is served by trying to expand their sushi experience and their dining experience.
Do we have a floor plan, a diagram?
Yeah, they have it right. So there's a picture. And I think you've been given that.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Because the restaurant and the takeout area isn't at street level. It's steps. It's a number of steps up on the mezzanine.
Right. You're currently in the space now?
Yes.
And you're going to expand the space, is that correct? Rearrange it.
Exactly.
The reconfiguring the space for the takeout.
Counselor, I think you wrote the year on top of the sticky and it didn't transfer onto the sheet, if you can.
I'm trying.
Thank you. And what kind of sake would you be providing?
I mean, all kinds in terms of...
Can you explain your current sake menu?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's... Sake still is a rather obscure spirit here in the States, and so we try to offer a pretty wide range of variety from your affordable to a little bit more high-end, and within that format, there's different styles. So we try to include all different styles so that we can sort of broaden the public's knowledge of sake, make it a little bit more interesting, bring value to our restaurant, and give guests another reason to come in so that they can have an experience that's separate from other sushi restaurants to really make ourselves distinct from other sushi restaurants. We certainly educate our staff so that they become knowledgeable and they can really impart their knowledge to the guests. So really it's as wide a range as possible. When it is a specific season for a certain type of sake, we try to bring that in and highlight that aspect.
But you're also going to educate your staff at the takeout area, the grab-and-go
Absolutely,
area,
yeah.
To help...
Right, to help get us understand. Probably have means some sort of description for each sake so that they're not going in blindly, you know, just help educate guests to make a purchase that they'll understand and like, so...
And we believe that once this concept comes out, it'll increase sales and the neighborhood will embrace it. But again, it's part and parcel of the food program. But yeah, there will be some benefit for the residents who are sake drinkers.
And would that be the exclusive beverage that you would be selling or other stuff?
Potentially wine and maybe just obscure Japanese beers. But mostly, I mean, I think the greater need is for sake, so we're trying to focus on that, really. We feel like that would be the biggest asset.
But you would be trying to mirror the menu and the programs in your current space.
Right, correct.
What is it? Wine.
Okay. Mr. Moore, you're the manager of record of Cafe Sushi, correct?
Correct.
You have had no disciplinary issues?
Nope.
And you're up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regard to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yes.
You understand, I expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws,
of
and regulations.
Course, yes.
Any other questions?
No.
Anyone in favor of this petition?
I'm in favor of the petition.
To please state.
And save your teacher. Conditionally, under the condition that the commission can demonstrate that there's a public need for this, which I have, again, seen no evidence of public need for this application. I haven't seen a single letter from any resident or any petition or anything like that, demonstrating that there's a public need, and that the commission can demonstrate to me that there is a public need for this, then I will be in favor of this application.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay. Counselor, anything else?
I think the restaurant and its long-standing relationship in the community and its existing plans for expansion and the needs for a sake in the community speak for itself.
Mr. Moore, would you be able to submit to the commission sort of a plan in terms of the type of sake and how you're envisioning this a little bit more detailed?
Absolutely, sure.
And I'm not sure if you two need it. I would just like to defer and look, take a look at that.
I agree.
But
sure. I don't necessarily need it, but
I mean, it's up to you too. I mean, if you're ready to vote on it, I'm happy.
I'm ready to vote. I'll go with what you're saying about just get a little more detailed information.
But would you like to see their sake menu?
Well, I mean, I understand the concept,
mm-hmm.
and it definitely is a concept that would seem to work business-wise. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more interested in the fact that for us, for this type of package store license, I understand the business model behind it, and I understand the benefit to the business, and definitely, and the benefit to the customer of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm a cafe sushi customer, it totally makes sense to me. I can totally see the public need for that, and it makes total sense, and it's good. I'm also, at the same time, I don't want to forget the public that is not a regular cafe sushi patron. I want to, the person that walks to this package store to get the sake, not necessarily the food.
Well, sake is generally eaten with sushi or Japanese-style food.
Oh, I get that.
So I would think I would think that if there's any other customer who wants to either make it at home, make this type of food at home, or eating in other similar type restaurants, they would go to Cafe Sushi because there's no other availability in the community for this type of liquor.
That's the thing. I mean, I go to liquor stores and I see sake all the time. So, but you're telling me that you're talking about a specific sake, a specific selection that's not available, but I keep asking you questions about it and you cannot answer
yeah,
me
so
except
there's,
generally.
There's certainly like a wide range
can
of...
Can you give the commission an explanation of the different types of sake and the different ranges? Because when you're going into a general, specifically, because
absolutely.
When you're going into a package store in general, you're getting one bottle screw top sake
yep.
that's $4.99.
Correct.
And your type of product is on a completely different level.
So if you want me to get super specific.
Please.
Okay, so
thank you.
There's an absolute. Sorry, I wasn't, I guess, understanding the nature of the question. There's, how can I break it down? So there's different designations of sake depending on the polish of the rice. There's ginjo, there's daiginjo, and then there's futsushu. Futsushu being the lowest, or seishu, which is more of the everyday sort of sake that's your everyday table wine, table sake. So not a lot of polish, very straightforward, not a lot of nuance to that. Then the ginjo's got a little bit more polish to it. It's got a character that might be a little bit more floral or fruity. And so depending on the style of process as well. There's like various different styles that date back from way back when, like Kimoto style, which is a very old style where you basically brew the sake out in the open, like an open tank or open sort of vessel, and you hand churn it. And by doing so, they believe that it accelerates the lacto-fermentation process by bringing in the outside elements to it. Then there's the Yamahai process, which you heat the mash as you're fermenting it to produce alcohol. And then the more modern style, which is just tank fermentation and just gets pressed. So there's that.
So part of the differential.
Excuse
is,
me, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So as you go up, and I'm just saying degrees of polish, mm-hmm. the prevalence decreases. So the more polished, the less you'll find that in circulation.
So with the highest amount of polish, which is considered to be like Daiginjo, those sakes tend to be a little bit more expensive. They tend to have a lot more nuance to it. More fruity elements, very pretty.
But the availability of them.
They have much
the
more
availability.
Rare. So rare. The key. Let me jump you for a second. So the distinction would be going into a high-end wine store versus going into a corner liquor store where they have 20 bottles of red wine ranging in price from $4.99 to $10.99. Where you might go into a Marty's Liquors or another wine merchant in the area whose wine range may go from $4 but may also go to $200 or $250. So a customer is not going to go into the corner liquor store. It's a higher level of sale. With sake, it's the same thing. That the consumer can't go into the corner store or even the high-end wine store and get the type of sakes that we're talking about here. These are very rare, very limited production. These are products that really are only carried in a Japanese restaurant or a sushi restaurant that aren't really available to the public. So that when you go in and sushi has become a very prevalent takeout item these days, particularly with the grab-and-go, the Uber Eats or whatnot. So with the takeout concept becoming more important, the opportunity is the customer's going to want to be drinking the sake and going to want a higher-end wine experience or sake experience, similar to having a nice dinner at home when you're buying a nice bottle of wine for dinner. It's not available in sake. It's just not. So part of this is providing that service to the community because the people who know the wine and the sake know his product and know what's going to be sold. But just like not everybody will buy, you know, a craft beer, not everybody will buy a high-end bottle of sake. And the discussion was very technical, but there really are different grades and different polishes of the wine, and similar to beers, red wine, white wine, that's just not available to the public. And it's not even the type of sake that he's talking about. It's the general availability. It's very rare. And it even goes from hot sake to cold sake. So there's all sorts of variations of this product.
Right. Just to corroborate what Mr. Lipschitz is saying, he's absolutely right, the availability of sake out, and especially in Boston, if you go to the corner store or Blanchard's or whatever, is very limited. You're not going to have the scope of variety, whether it be on the expensive side or even affordable side. It's just the knowledge of the public here in this city isn't quite there, and therefore, for those who want to get more involved and have different varieties, that option just isn't available. and we're hoping to be able to fill in that gap and sort of help the city, you know, Boston, Greater Boston, Cambridge, wherever in general, sort of expand their sake option knowledge.
And you'd be educating the public,
right,
and the residents and the customers.
I understand it more now.
No, I understand it now. I think for me, in terms of, again, I get the concept. I like the concept. I think it's, I think you're right. I think sake is something that, generally, to properly enjoy it, you have to go to a restaurant, because what you do get in the store, you can probably see maybe one bottle that's worth buying and all the others are better served for cooking. I get that. I think for me, in this particular application, what I would want to see is, and I'm not quite sure if it's done in terms of a condition or in terms of us deferring or getting more clarification, but I would want to see something that makes it clear that when I walk into this space, if I just want to buy the sake, I buy the sake. I don't have to buy the sushi. Because again, the way that currently this concept works in the state of Massachusetts is that this is not a package store for the benefit of cafe sushi. This is a package store for the benefit for the public. So it is not like in other states or countries where you can buy this, whatever the restaurant sells, as part of the takeout. This literally has to be its own concept.
Would you want to see an advertisement or a marketing piece in the windows?
I don't know. I think that's where I'm... Yeah.
I mean, that's something we can certainly do, that sales are independent.
Ms. Courtney, if you're going to speak, please take it outside.
I'm not speaking.
You are speaking to Mr. Dietrich, and it's becoming interrupted.
I was not.
Ms. Courtney, you can either leave the room and speak outside, or you can please be quiet.
I wasn't saying.
You were. Your recording will show it. I'm sorry, Mr. Lipschitz, you were saying?
Would a sign, some sort of sign advertising the sale of the beverages in the window suffice?
Yeah, and I mean, probably if you have a takeout menu, I would just say that, you know, you can purchase this. Something that makes it clear for the customer that they don't have to purchase the food as well, although I understand that that's the basis of the concept and that's probably going to be the bulk of the business there.
But I think that, honestly, I think that goes without saying. And if you need to set out in the menu or, you know, sales of liquor independent, I don't think that's an issue. I mean, the business would certainly welcome the sales. There's no intent to limit.
No, I understand.
Right, only acts in our favor.
I understand, and I'm just trying to make it clear to the public.
I think, with that being said, we hadn't, within the drawings or anything, really set out to advertise and promote the sake aspect of it, because we weren't sure if that was going to be possible. But if that is what the approval would be contingent upon, we have no problem trying to promote the sake on the very exterior, the facade of
and
the space,
and
to
in
let
the
people
menu.
Know.
It's not as much as promoting it; it's just as making it clear that you can do one without having to be.
But
right,
that's certainly
right.
A condition that can be placed on the.
I mean, whether
the takeout menu.
I mean, right now, and again, I think it's because the drawings are pretty general. They're more aesthetic than the actual, you know, are you going to have them in racks and people see them in the racks as to what's available, you're going to have cold, if you're already going to sell it cold, if it's going to be in a cooler there that, you know, the customer can grab it, give it to the cash register, pay for it, and leave.
Right, yes. We were planning on both.
Okay.
With the little placards and descriptions and such.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, with that said, I would vote to grant But prior to the issuance of the license, I would like to see a sort of detailed floor plan in terms of what's out there, and then maybe the menu that you will be presenting or putting out there for customers in terms of final determination, in terms to make sure that at least my concern is addressed. Okay.
Sure.
That's fine.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
How would you like us to get that to you?
Well, I think once you, I mean, I think if you want to wait to see if the ABCC approves the application,
okay,
and then get it then,
okay,
that would be
fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. From Eagle Bank, that the Middlesex Lounge holder of a CBL alcohol license has satisfied the pledge, and that that pledge has been released, acknowledged. We also received various notifications of purchasing of medallions, JP Cab, medallion number 92, acknowledged. Christy Cab, purchase 231, acknowledged. Gardell Taxi, purchase 205, acknowledged. White Eagle Taxi, purchase 134, acknowledged. Aman Cab Inc. has purchased 217, acknowledged. Hisham Ghazi, DBA DHTB, purchase 224, acknowledged. Wadchi, Inc., purchased 193, acknowledged. We got an application from William Phillips to get a new annual Hawker Peddler license under Boston Barbecue Works LLC. Granted. Casa do Benfica da Nova Inglaterra at 178 Elm Street, all alcohol club license, has notified that it has closed and surrendered the license. Acknowledged, license canceled, file closed. John Kesson, on behalf of Cafe Dupay, this is the application that we heard for an outdoor patio. Oh.
I think the last meeting, where they had three tables outside, and we asked about the stand because they couldn't be seen from whether a camera would be sufficient to monitor the outdoor patio. My sense is no, based on the way the patio advisory and, from the ABCC and the policy is, so I would say no. Application 46303 and 46304, these are actual garage licenses that are currently there. It's just the lack is, no, he bought the corporation, so it's just basically a change of corporation.
Okay.
But since they're submitted as new application based on the way that the application is, they're still at the zoning step, so I would defer at this time. And Shannon Edgar, on behalf of Storm Alongsider LLC, applied for a farmer winery at Kendall Square Market on October, from May 15th, crossover 30th, obviously. We're a little late on this. Let's go to Grant.
Okay.
have the minutes of May 8th.
I was not here.
Yep. So, would you be able to look at those?
Yep.
Okay, so approved. Moving on to one days. 46719 for a malt and wine license at Cambridge Folk Club, Terrace Landing. Granted with today's detail required. 46993 Bill Manley for an entertainment license, multiple locations in Harbor Square throughout the summer. Granted. 47132 Faith Marshall for an entertainment license at Senate Park on July 14th. Granted. 47260 Juliet Iredale for a wine with entertainment license at 194 Brattle on July 14th. Granted. 47340 Kim Holman for the dance Luminarium Dance Company for an alcohol license with entertainment at Green Street Studios on June 23rd. Granted with an amended start time of 5 p.m. for permission letter. 47677 Paul Lee from the Cambridge Licensee Advisory Board for an alcohol license at Sydney Street on July 16th.
Madam Chair, may I speak on this matter?
Granted. No, we're not taking comments on these. I would grant this with the following conditions. A limited number of drinks.
On 47677?
Yep. Associated with the admission price. Otherwise, and thereafter, alcohol to be sold. Also, police detail required. Wine tastings. Limited to 1 ounce per serving. Malt to 2 ounce per serving. And other alcohol to 1/4 ounce per serving. And then food shall be served in conjunction with the tasting. The number of drinks, and these are samples, so it's 5:30 to 8, so how many would we limit it to?
3 per guest, 4 per guest.
But the ounce and the fourth ounce, and I would say we did recently one where we did was it 20 servings?
Yeah, I think so. All right. Yeah. It was just less than.
That sound about right?
It does.
That's fine.
And I'm just going to put here samples. For 801 was already considered and granted by the board. Number 28, as we stated, through 32 were duplicates. Number 33, Andrea Campbell for an entertainment license at MIT on 615, granted.
Mm-hmm.
Number 34 was a duplicate. 48322, Eileen Murphy, Eric Tech Square for a malt and wine with entertainment license on July 18th, August 1st, and August 15th. Granted. Mm-hmm. 48209 Jacob Crawford of the New Dance Complex on June 22, 23rd, and 28th, and 29th for malt and wine license for dance recitals. Granted.
Mm-hmm.
48281, Justice Star Corporation Entertainment License on June 27th. Granted. 48237, Bill Manley, Harvard Square Business Association on June 28th for an entertainment license. Granted. 48264, Adam Strandberg for an all alcohol with entertainment license at MIT on June 22nd, granted with an amended start time of 4 p.m. for MIT registration. 48316, Stephanie Dibell on behalf of Worth Bar for a malt and wine license on June 19th, granted with the condition that alcohol must be sold. Applications 48323 and 48529, Eric Fiorasa for St. Constantine and Helen Church for malt wine with entertainment and soccer peddler license on June 14th, 16th through the 16th for the Greek festival.
Mm-hmm.
Granted. ...48349, Shelby McKenney, Alexander Real Estate for an entertainment license at Rogers Street Park on June 26th and 27th. Payment license, granted. 48459, Paul Clark, Malt and Wine with Entertainment on Sydney Street on July 11th. Granted with police detail required. 45070, Catherine Ferranti for an entertainment license at Longfellow Park on July 13th for a wedding. She still has not submitted the park permit, but she did give us the park permit number. She was just having problems printing it, considering we don't have, or we may not meet before then. I would grant it conditioned upon the park permit being submitted.
Sure.
Right. 48423, Mary Ellen Carvello on behalf of the city on June 29th for an entertainment license. Granted no license fee for the event. 47671, Robert Madfis for a malt and wine license at Mariposa Bakery for a pop-up event on June 27th. They granted with amended start time of 7 p.m. per permission letter. 48551, Javier Negron for an entertainment license at Old Cambridge Baptist Church on June 23rd. Granted. 48366, Benjamin Wallace on behalf of Gallery 263 for alcohol license at 263 Pearl on June 14th. 48541, James Pierre on behalf of Community Arts Center for an entertainment license at Windsor on June 14th. Granted with amended hours of 4 to 7 p.m. per permission letter. Okay. 48572, Ruby Vale for a malt and wine, for a malt license, sorry, at 52 JFK on June 22nd for cider tasting. They granted with the conditions that the tasting is limited to 2 ounces per serving. Food must be served in conjunction with the tasting, and they must either charge for each taste or they should. They need to charge an admission price and limit the number of servings.
Okay.
In case that they decide to charge for the admission price, how many servings would we give them? 4:30 to 6, about 2 hours.
What, 2 ounce servings?
Yeah, 2 ounce servings. Do we do Five? Okay. 480 96, Hardee's and Jason Alves on behalf of the City of Cambridge for an entertainment license on June 13th, July 11th, and 9/12 at 1310 Cambridge Street, granted. Mm-hmm. City event, no fee. Four 7908 Leo Crowley for an alcohol license at the ART for an outdoor patio on June 26th. Mm-hmm. I'd say granted with the condition that they must implement a system identifying the minors or adults attending the event. And then moving on to the matters that were added to the agenda after posting and prior to this meeting, we have application for a noise variance 48665 Benedict Alberts from Triboro Crane for a crane set up at 215 First Street, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on June 22nd with an alternate date of June 29th. Okay. Granted? We also have another application for noise variance 48676, Jason Page on behalf of Turner Construction for installation of pavement at 1 Amherst Street from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. from June 19th through June 21st with alternate dates of June 22 to June 22nd. DPW had requested that this be granted based on the fact that then the work can be conducted during the daytime and it would be the least amount of traffic disruption. Yeah. Better quality control, granted. One-day applications, 48837, George Odell, Cambridge Girls Youth Softball Entertainment License at Danahy Park, June 22nd, and June 23rd, granted.
Is that permit fee waived? No.
Nope. 48893, Michael Conley. For the committee of elect Michael Conley, one day wine and malt at Work Bar on June 24th. I would say granted with the condition that alcohol must be sold.
Mm-hmm.
49008 Ryan Thackberry on behalf of Greek Brew Hall for the wine and malt license at Brattle Pass on June 22nd. The park permit on this is attached to the other application, 46993. Granted with the condition that they must implement a system identifying the adults from the minors in attendance. For 8882, Julie Berry from Cambridge Arts Council for multiple one-day entertainment licenses as listed, July 1st, 3rd, 8th, 10th, 16th, 18th, 22nd, 24th, 30th, and then in August 1st, 6th, 8th, 13th, 15th, 20th, 22nd, 27th, 29th, and
31st.
Okay. Granted with no fee as it's a city department. City event. Next one is 48977, Michelle Godfrey on behalf of DHSP for a one-day temporary amusement at Ridgefield.
Granted
city event, no fee. 48729, again, Michelle Godfrey for DHSP for entertainment licenses. Listed June 22nd and in July 8th, 15th, 22nd, 29th, August 5th, July 9th, 16th, 23rd, 30th, August 6th, and then so on and so forth is listed on the agenda if they go through June 15th. Granted city event, no fee.
Yep. 417.